this is your Polycast for Thursday, October 27th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, strong words on health insurance at the Capitol and a peaceful campaign in northwestern Minnesota. Efforts to help some Minnesotans head off a looming spike in their health insurance costs were stymied again by another round of pre-election finger-pointing at the Capitol. DFL Governor Mark Dayton said it's up to legislative leaders to set aside politics and find a short-term fix, but Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd accused the governor of a dereliction of leadership. Dayton and Dowd have now held competing news conferences and exchanged letters on the issue, but neither has picked up the phone to try to work out a deal. Tim Pugmire has more.
Speaker Dowd said he was offended by a letter that Dayton sent this week, asking House and Senate leaders to come up with a plan soon for helping Minnesotans who will be hit with big premium increases next year for individual market plans. Dayton is proposing financial assistance for those not eligible for federal tax credits. But Dowd says Dayton isn't even acknowledging the more pressing problem caused by enrollment caps.
You can throw all the money you want to at this problem. There will be people in the state of Minnesota on January 1st that will not be able to buy health insurance at any cost. That is unacceptable. And that was brought on 100% by Governor Dayton and the Democrats in the legislature.
Dowd, who became increasingly irate during a 40-minute news conference, said a special session must address multiple issues, including affordability, access, enrollment caps, and the technical operations of the state health insurance exchange, MinSure. Dowd also said Governor Dayton needs to marshal the resources of his administration to deal with the crisis.
And if I find out that those people aren't working 24/7 to find a solution to help these people get health insurance on January 1st, I'm going to call for Dayton's resignation myself, personally. This is absolutely a dereliction of leadership that he is trying to pass the buck on to others right now.
A spokesman for the governor said he would not dignify Dowd's temper tantrum with a response. Earlier in the day, Dayton said the next president and Congress must fix what he sees as severe defects in the federal Affordable Care Act. Dayton supports the law, but his recent critique about the law's affordability has been used by Republicans in campaign ads against Democrats. In the meantime, Dayton said he's been meeting with his commissioners and staff to look at potential short-term solutions for Minnesota.
We're doing the very best we can under difficult circumstances, and it's not, I've heard from many people, and it's just very painful to me to hear their stories of the unaffordability and the disruption to their medical care resulting from this, and I take it very, very seriously, and I deplore it.
Dayton was taking aim at Republicans on another key campaign issue, transportation funding. He said GOP lawmakers were blocking the state transportation department from using $105 million in federal funds for a long list of road and bridge projects that will now be delayed. Dayton blamed the latest impasse on House Republicans' inaction last session on a transportation funding bill.
They said they're for transportation projects. That was their rhetoric all last spring, and here we got transportation projects that they're just sitting and preventing from going ahead.
Speaker Dowd accused the governor of using the transportation complaint to try to shift attention away from health care. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
In the battle for control of the state legislature, Republicans hope to pick up a northwestern Minnesota Senate seat. It's a district that leans conservative, but DFL Senator Leroy Stumpf held the seat for decades before retiring earlier this year. As Dan Gunderson reports, the race features two political newcomers running a low-key, grassroots, polite campaign.
Both candidates grew up in this district, in the far northwest corner of the state, a few miles apart. DFLer Kip Fontaine is about 20 years older than Republican Mark Johnson, but like a lot of people in this rural district, they have social connections.
I know Mark Johnson's family. His wife, Skylar, grew up in the church that Sheila and I were married in, and I know Skylar's parents very well.
That's DFL hopeful Kip Fontaine, who says personal relationships help keep a campaign focused on issues rather than personal attacks. Republican Mark Johnson says a civil campaign reflects the values of this rural district.
Northwest Minnesota isn't really known for its cutthroat politics either, I don't think. I mean, we had Leroy Stump here, and nicest guy in the world, you know, if you talk to anybody about Leroy. I think it really fits the mold of Northwest Minnesota.
DFLer Fontaine has an edge in name recognition. He worked as a county prosecutor for 20 years, and for the past decade he's managed public defenders in 9 northwestern counties. But Johnson isn't conceding that advantage.
With a name like Johnson, everybody knows me. So it's not as bad as you think.
Mark Johnson owns a concrete construction company with his dad. He also runs a small law practice in East Grand Forks. Johnson is running because he says there are too many government regulations and because he thinks high taxes are hurting Minnesota businesses. The Second Amendment and conservative social issues like abortion and marriage are also important. But Johnson says he's also aware that voters want lawmakers who will solve problems.
I don't think you want to draw necessarily the line in the sand and say, I will not cross this line at any cost. You want to be able to work effectively. But there are principles at the same time that you want to be able to hold. I don't think you need to sell yourself out to get compromised.
DFL candidate Kip Fontaine says he hears a lot of voter frustration with partisan legislative gridlock.
In all of our relationships, whether they're personal, social, professional, or work, at some level we need to come together and compromise. And our democracy was based upon compromise.
Fontaine says some of the key issues for the district are health care reform, transportation funding to improve roads and bridges, and economic development. The district tilts Republican. It has 2 Republican state representatives. Mark Johnson says that gives him an edge, but he still needs to sell himself to voters. Democrat Kip Fontaine thinks it's a district where many voters choose a person rather than a party.
I think people are very independent-minded. They are not locked into party politics. They look at each race individually and determine who they believe the best candidate is.
Talk to local residents, and there's one clear theme. They are tired of negative politics. Lorraine Schmidt is raking leaves in front of her Red Lake Falls home. Politics is not her favorite subject right now.
For the president, I think it's terrible. It's just a mess this year.
But she doesn't see candidates for state or local office as part of that mess. On the boulevard nearby are lawn signs for both state Senate candidates.
I like all of them, though. They're nice people. I mean, they come and visit you, and they're very, very nice people. And whether they're Republican or Democrat, I talk to them, and I think they're real reasonable.
The candidates say it's hard to tell who has the advantage in this open seat, but both parties believe they can win this race. DFL officials say despite the district becoming more conservative, a strong candidate is key to winning the race. Republican Party officials think they have a good chance to claim the northwestern Minnesota seat, long held by Democrats. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Thief River Falls.
This year's city council races in Rochester are exposing divisions in the community about the impact of what's called the Destination Medical Center Economic Development Project. Candidates are debating whether local residents are taking a back seat to the interests of real estate developers. And as Catherine Richard reports, developers and outside political groups are pouring money into the city's normally low-profile election.
In Rochester's northwest corner, resident Bob Yanish opens his front door to find City Council President candidate Sean Allen.
Yes, sir.
What are you most concerned about or thinking about?
Just, I suppose, the growth.
Yeah?
Growth is good as long as it's done the right way.
Yanish is echoing a fundamental tension playing out in Rochester. The Destination Medical Center effort is expected to create 30,000 new jobs in 2 decades and attract billions in new development. Already, at least 6 high-end apartment buildings have opened or broken ground in the downtown area in the last year. But some residents are startled by the pace and troubled by the process. Candidate Sean Allen says he wants to see Rochester expand, too. He's a real estate developer himself, but he says other developers are in a land rush and the city council is too deferential to them.
It is causing the rest of the community to say, wait a minute, is this about developers, or is it about Mayo Clinic, or is our community about us? And I think it's about us.
Those strains are playing out routinely in city council meetings as neighborhood groups and developers who want to build big projects in residential areas battle over seemingly minute details. Allen says the city doesn't have a good way to balance those competing interests.
We don't really have a very good process in our city for resolving that angst between developer and neighbor. Every single project is contentious, and that's just tearing our city apart in a lot of ways.
And with Rochester's real estate market drawing lots of investment from developers, so are city council races, even though they're nonpartisan. Longtime 4th Ward Councilman Mark Bilderback says it's a stark difference from previous elections.
I've gotten more developers than I've ever had donate before.
Bilderback says that deep-pocketed supporters would never sway his vote on a project. But with so much at stake for developers in Rochester, he understands why people like him are getting more contributions. For instance, records show that the adult children of local real estate mogul Javon Bay have contributed a total of $2,600 to Bilderback and others. Both children live near the Twin Cities and declined to elaborate on their donations. But in a meeting this week, their father made it clear patients coming to the Mayo Clinic are his top priority and not local residents. In a recording provided by the Rochester Post-Bulletin, Bay said he's not interested in catering to, quote, the yuppies that are living on the outskirts of Rochester.
What keeps this town more than just a dumpy little Midwestern town of 110,000? Are the patients and the people that come with the patients to the Mayo Clinic.
The stakes are drawing large political contributions from well beyond Rochester, too. On the advice of the local Realtors Association, the National Association of Realtors is spending a combined $30,000 to help commercial realtor Scott Haas defeat a sitting council member and to reelect City Council President Randy Staver. And Minnesota's Future, a statewide political group that typically spends money to elect Republicans to state offices, is spending $44,000 on the same races. To put that in perspective, Staver spent roughly $10,000 on his 2013 race. Even though real estate and Republican interests clearly prefer him, Staver rejects the claim that the council is too close to developers.
Because we are local government, we're always going to have those sorts of connections. It's something that we have to be cognizant of, making sure that we are making unbiased decisions, that we are relying on fact.
Even Staver has some qualms about the influx of campaign dollars. He says the money is unprecedented and troublesome, and it could lead in the direction that critics like candidate Sean Allen are warning about.
As the price of politics continues to increase, I really don't want to exclude those in our community that would really like to get involved.
Meanwhile, with just weeks to go before the election, flyers paid for by the National Realtors Association highlighting Staver's commitment to development have already hit Rochester mailboxes. Catherine Richard, Minnesota Public Radio News in Rochester.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.